You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, hour number two of the program here. I'm excited to listen to some Pete Carroll audio that was taken from the John Clayton show just about an hour ago. The professor had a chance to speak with Pete. By the way, later on in the show, we're going to talk to Michael Bumpus, our usual Friday conversation with him. He'll be coming up at 2 o'clock. All right, so we talked for a bunch of the show here, and really yesterday's show too, about Russell Wilson's comments from yesterday about wanting to treat the first three quarters of the game like it's the fourth quarter. Why? Because, well, the fourth quarter is where he really tends to shine, so why not treat the first three quarters that way? And by the way, just to say it for like the 50th time, because we got in kind of an argument with Salk about this, we're not talking about abandoning the offense or the offensive approach that the Seahawks have. That has worked. Nobody's saying they need to be the Saints. But there is I think there is a happy medium between what they've been and what Russell wants them to be. It's just giving him a few more opportunities, maybe one more per possession or something like that, on maybe it's early downs, maybe it's key spots in the game, whatever it is, just trust the quarterback a little bit more to make plays, sustaining drives, whatever it ends up being in the first three quarters. That's the way I interpret it. I know everybody has a different way to look at that. That's just the way I look at it. But Pete addressed that very comment on with the professor. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, well, I think, as we've been saying, the Russ is the best he's ever been, you know, and so we want Russ to be able to do as much as he can possibly do that fits within, you know, the framework. And so it's just a natural evolution. You know, for years, John, I feel like I've been saying to people as they ask, you know, how good is Russell? How does he compare? And I said, well, give him some time to get some years under his belt. You know, and this is an extraordinary position to play. And he really is in total command of it now. He's at the best that he's ever been, as I said. And so that just gives us more freedom to utilize his background and his wits and all of the great ingenuity that he can bring to the game. We'll just continue to expand the things that he does for us. And he's really excited about that, and we're looking forward to it.
Should he be expanding his wits, Jake?
Well, Russell has, I'm not sure wits means. I'm assuming he's meaning intelligence, football intelligence, and his ability to react on the fly, to see things and then change them on the fly. And Pete is right. He has continued to grow. He has continued to mature in that way. And to me, as I hear Pete Carroll talk in this cut, is that something that we have said in the beginning, at the top of the show. They are in year three of this offense between Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer, Russell Wilson, and the rest of the coaching staff. Russell's at the prime of his career. He's ready to take on more of a role. He's ready to take on more. And what you're hearing from your head coach is that he fully believes that as well, that he's ready to take on this mantle. So now let's see what that looks like. Let's see if this offense and Pete Carroll is really, truly willing and wanting to let this thing go and continue to capitalize on the growth and the strengths of Russell Wilson. That's ultimately what I take out of it.
I wonder, when we go to assess this, like once they actually get out there on the field in games, I wonder, will we look at it in terms of pass attempts, or will we just use our eyeballs in certain situations? I guess I'm kind of asking this of myself. I feel like we'll be watching the game. There could be scenarios where they go to Russell on a certain down, certain situation where they might not normally. And I might say, oh, okay, well, there's evidence that they're trusting Russell a little bit more. But then maybe the pass attempts number will be the same. And other people will say, well, no, he's throwing the exact same amount. They haven't changed a lick. See what I mean? I mean, there's
yeah.
It might be tough to identify if they do alter it.
Well, it can be, but I really don't feel like it will. There will be a difference in their approach at the beginning of games. You'll be able to feel that. You'll be able to see it. I agree that it might not necessarily mean a drastic change in attempts of the game or attempts, but it might be how it feels at the beginning of games, what the tempo looks like, how much are they putting on the plate of Russell Wilson during a given game. And the best example I can give to you, Tom, is don't look at the attempts, the final attempts, and that's not what I mean. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, for example, last season, yes, Russell went into overtime. He threw, you know, a bunch of times, but it was more about how they started the game. The offense revolved around Russell. Russell was the point guard distributing to the playmakers, and then they also allowed the pass to open up the run. That's not going to be the case every single week, but it goes to show that Chris Carson can still get his yardage and can still have a great impact on the game if you don't, you know, dedicate to running the ball the first, you know, first half of the game and then open things up in the second half.
Let's hear some more from Pete Carroll here talking about Jamal Adams. Cut one.
Well, he's going to be used like he's capable of being used. That means he can do a little bit of everything, you know, and so I'm real excited about it. This is nothing new for us, you know, it's no new scheme issues or anything like that. He is just very capable. He can cover guys in zone and in man. He's a really good tackler, and he's a good defender on the edge. He's a good defender in the box, and he can really come off, you know, when he's pressuring as well. So he brings you everything that you could hope for, and he's got a great tough attitude about him. And our fans are just going to love the way he plays.
Yeah, I saw Shaquille Griffin yesterday was already talking about how everybody on the defense, or at least the secondary, has to match Jamal Adams' energy. So, you know, you talk about being a leader, and is it lead by example? Is it by talking a whole bunch? Well, in this case, it seems like it's by example. They're already trying to follow him around, Jake.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, and it will be a little bit of both as Jamal gets more comfortable. He gets to be around his teammates more. They get to be around him. He'll become more and more vocal, but I love to hear that, Tom. I love to hear that Shaquille Griffin already feels like he has to up his game because Jamal Adams is going to be bringing his A game every single day in practice. That's why you made this trade, to infuse energy and juice into this defense that has been lacking that over the last 2 years, and especially in 2019.
When is Quentin Dunbar coming back? Cut two.
Yeah, he's gone through the quarantine period today. He gets his physical, and I think tomorrow we got a shot to get him out there. So that'll be the first time. You know, we'll go real easy on it and just make sure we get him back and get him going. But we're glad to have him. It's going to be fun to see him out here in the uniform, see what he looks like.
Now, he doesn't have COVID. At least we haven't heard of that as of yet. So, yeah. What do you think is more difficult? If you're a veteran, I guess he's not a veteran, but if you're already established in the NFL, going to a new team or being a rookie for the first time, it's got to be a rookie, right?
It's definitely a rookie. A rookie, everything is new to you. The environment, the playbook, it is all new. The level of competition and play, all these vets, look, the game there are differences in schemes and how guys are used, but ultimately it's football, and you're used to absorbing a lot of information. So, again, it's not to say that it's an easy transition. Anybody can do it, but it's a lot easier than a rookie. Now, Tom, when you hear that Dunbar is coming back into, you know, he's coming back and he's going to be a part of this thing, how excited does that make you for the potential of this secondary?
Oh, not at all. I think they're going to be terrible, especially with him.
Come on.
No. The fact that he was able to get off from those accusations that were initially hurled at him, and who knows what he actually did or didn't do, but after what his lawyer did or was accused of paying off those witnesses, the fact that he came out of that thing scot-free, that he got away clean, is like the biggest miracle that's happened to the Seahawks in a long time. So how excited am I with him and Adams back there? Words can't describe, Jake. Words cannot describe. Can't put a price tag on it. You?
I, be- I'm genuinely excited, and I believe that when you first, you know, heard this, you said it's it felt like getting a new free agent signing that you already had on your team. It was an added bonus, and that it made you feel that this team was primed for a Super Bowl. You didn't feel that way before, two and a half weeks ago, but now you do. And I feel like Quentin Dunbar, if he remains healthy, he has the ability to be a top corner in this league who is also versatile, can play inside, outside. He can truly cover the number one receiver. So you got two corners that you feel really confident in. It's been a long time since you could say that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams in the NFC, as I pointed out, I think, yesterday, that really have a great shot to get to the Super Bowl, certainly the NFC Championship. But the Seahawks are one of those teams. I mean, there's a lot of weaknesses around the conference, too. Let's hear what Pete Carroll has to say about that secondary. Cut three.
It's a really good-looking group. We've got real good competition at spots. I'm anxious to see how Ugo battles with Marquise Blair at the nickel spot and what we're doing there. We think it gives us a real physical player to mix in there. He's done well so far, starting to get the book down. So it's going to be a very good group. I think we should be very aggressive in our style of play by the makeup and the nature of the guys that we have, and hopefully we'll be really physical too.
Woo! That's what I want to hear. I want to hear aggressive. Hearing Pete Carroll say that due to the personnel, the new look, the new style, everything that we feel, that fires me up more than anything else. Not soft zone, not feeling like you have to play conservatively, but being up in their face and being able to dictate to quarterbacks, to receivers, to tight ends, this is how we're going to play. And that tells me that as a coaching staff, you have a ton of confidence in the guys that you have, and now it can allow you to get back to what you're most comfortable with as a defensive coordinator. So, Tom, that might be the most exciting cut that we've played so far.
And along with that, I mean, the toughness. Remember we talked about team speed as one of the off-season tenets of our program. We came up with those five things that the Seahawks had to do. Team speed was one of them. Did they get faster, Pete? Cut four.
I don't think there's any question, and it really jumps out at you at the wide receiver spot. The tight end spot looks fast. In the running back spots, the competition, DJ Dallas has been a nice little spark for us out there on the field. He can do a lot of things. On defense, too, with Bruce coming to us, he's got terrific athleticism and speed, and it shows up immediately. Benson's got good quicks off the edge, too. And then when you see, you can't help but watch 33 out there. When Jamal's running around, he just flashes so often. It gives you a real sense that we can fly the football, and it's fun to see it out there.
Bruce, look, when we were talking about team speed, we didn't necessarily mean running backs and receivers, guys who can just go. We were talking more about some of these other players, guys, at the edge, etc.
Yeah.
Mayoa and Irvin are veterans. I mean, does Irvin improve their speed?
Yeah. Yeah, he does. Now,
he does still?
Look, does it improve it over Jadeveon Clowney? I don't necessarily think so in playmaking ability, but yeah, Bruce is extremely athletic. He's versatile. He gives him a lot of options on what to do. He can play Sam. He can play defensive end. He still has an explosive nature to his game. Absolutely. I do believe that Bruce, fits into that category.
All right. And then the bad news from the other day, Daryl Taylor showed up injured. That surgery he had on the stress fracture, was it his shin? I think it was his shin. Still a problem, and we heard that it was going to be a couple weeks before he got back. What's up with him, Pete? Cut five.
The one guy that we're missing is Daryl Taylor right now. He had his best day yesterday. He feels really good and feels like he's really coming back. He's just in the recovery mode. There's no damage or anything to in his rehab. It's just he's just got to get through the workload and endure it. And so I don't know what to put time-wise on that, but he had his best day, and so we're encouraged. He's in on everything. He's studying like crazy and chomping at the bit to get out.
Now, they've known about this the entire way, right? Like since the day they drafted him, and probably before that.
Correct.
If they were really looking that hard into him. They've been charting his progress probably since that day. So if you believe Pete that he had his best day yesterday, I'm not a doctor, but I'll take that, I guess, for what it's worth.
It's obviously positive, but I don't take it for any real value other than, okay, there's not a delay in his recovery process. He still has to get through protocols, and how long is that recovery process? I mean, let's just put it this way. Maybe it could be in a scenario like this. You sprain your ankle. You now have to recover, and let's say it's 2 weeks out or 4 weeks out. You know, maybe Daryl Taylor if it's a 4 week prognosis, he's in 2 weeks right now, and he's starting to look healthier, stronger at that point. So that's really what I think Pete is trying to say here. He's not ready to come out and practice anytime soon, but that he is getting stronger, he's getting better, and it's more about the muscle activation, making sure that he's strong and healthy before he comes back to practice than anything else. You don't want him to be at risk of re-injuring or re-aggravating this injury.
All right, I'm nervous because Stacy usually takes second down. I'm taking that today, and Jake has a quiz question for me. So
I
hope I don't embarrass myself. Let's do it. Four downs.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Jake, which Seahawk players are you hearing have made a good first impression at training camp?
Well, so far, in terms of signings, free agent signings, I have heard nothing but positive things. You talk about Bruce Irvin, his leadership, his impact on the field. It is immediately felt. It's almost like putting on an old glove that was just perfect. Bruce Irvin seems to be, back home and making himself feel welcomed, and dictating the tempo, dictating the leadership and the intensity of practice. Brandon Schell, right tackle, heard a lot of positive things about his athleticism and how they feel how he can be an upgrade in pass protection at this point. That was the big question about him, is we knew that he could be a run blocker and replace Ifedi adequately in that area. Can he be an adequate pass blocker? And so far, it's been very positive on that front. Greg Olsen has made a seamless transition here into Seattle so far. Obviously, a lot of work to continue to do, but between the connection between him and Russell Wilson and his ability to adapt into a new offense, it couldn't be any better. So that's very exciting news to hear as well. So those are three guys right off the top that I have heard nothing but rave reviews about.
Second down. All right, Jake, hit me.
Okay, Tom.
What do you got?
Now, this is a training camp question, okay? This is a training camp question. This is a building question, and you should know this because it's not a hidden secret. Before the players walk out onto the practice field, there is signage up above every door as they walk into meetings, as they walk out to the practice field, and before they walk out of the CenturyLink field. What is the slogan that Pete Carroll wants them to be tapping on the way out? What does it say?
Okay, well, there's one that I know for sure. It's up on the scoreboard in the corner of the field. It's got to be that one, right? It's got to be always compete, doesn't it? Always compete. Show me always compete. What?
Hold on.
Hold on. DJ, do you know what it is?
No chance.
You know, chance? So,
Wait a minute. So there's a slogan.
They take pictures all the time. Guys walking out to practice.
I'm all in or something?
It's close. It's very close. You're boiling hot. Boiling hot.
You're white hot, Wazzle. We're all in. Get all in. You're all
DJ,
in. I don't know what. What is it?
It's I'm in. So the Seahawks, they have signage all above the doorways, every single room that you go in. And it is just a reminder that Pete Carroll wants to give these players that, hey, I'm in. I'm giving everything that I have to this team. I'm focused. You've got my 100% attention. It's just one more extra, you know, little activation, little reminder to yourself as you're heading out to practice. So that is a ritual for every player on the Seattle Seahawks team. So, Tom, now you know.
All right, do I get credit for that? I wasn't that too far off.
You weren't far off. No, you were very, very close. Very close.
Okay. Third down. Uh-oh. Fashion question. Russell Wilson's wearing a visor during practice so far. Is he changing up his look, or is there a purpose to that?
He just wanted to add some more swag. He wanted to add some more swag to him, to his look. But this isn't just about a look. This is about purpose. Now, with everything that we've known from the NFL, they have looked into every single protocol possibly given or new mandates given, and they've really looked into possibly making all players wear a visor and possibly even a visor over the bottom of their face mask. Now, it would be extremely difficult. Players would not love it or be happy about it, but Russell is wearing this just so that he can be prepared. It's about as Russell Wilson of a thing that you can think of. He just wants to be prepared for every possible scenario and get comfortable having to wear a visor. Doesn't want to be surprised by it because it does give a little bit of a different view, a different look when you wear it as a quarterback. So he's just practicing for all scenarios there, Tom.
Fourth down. Is spring football a viable option for the Pac-12?
It's difficult. It's a very difficult question because theoretically, yes, it is a viable option for the Pac-12 to play spring football. But don't tell me that you're about player safety because you're putting player safety at the ultimate risk here of playing in the spring and then asking them quickly to turn that back around and play in the fall. From a revenue standpoint, you might have a really good opportunity in the spring. Obviously, there's been the XFL. There's been other teams that have tried it. It's been semi-successful. You just haven't necessarily brought in the fan base or been able to hold the fan base interest because there hasn't been interesting players or programs. So I do believe that it could be successful in the spring from a financial standpoint and that they could pull it off. But ultimately, I just think there's too many extra factors and a domino effect that would then coincide with playing this spring. So we'll have to wait this thing out. They're saying that they're going to reassess in January. We'll see if it's a real discussion.
Remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Halftime show's next. And Russell is staging a hostile takeover of the Seattle Seahawks. 710 ESPN Seattle.
Washington State Association of Broadcasters and this station.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Russell's taking over, Jake. Enough of this already. I'm the man. What was that song?
What kind
what
of takeover?
It was that song from a few years ago. I'm the man. I'm the man. I'm the man. Yes, I am. Yes, yes I am. Yes, I am. That's Russell Wilson.
Nailed
now.
It.
He's the man. He's put in the work with Jake Heaps all offseason to get better. In exchange for putting in the work all this time, you need to give me the ball. You need to revolve this offense around me and treat the rest of the game like we treat the fourth quarter. He said that yesterday. Let's review. Cut two.
Rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to, you know, make some stuff happen. I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, you know, I think 56-0 when we have the lead, you know, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, you know, getting ahead is a key thing. You know, I definitely believe in finishing strong. I think we won a lot of games in the fourth quarter, you know, do some fun things in the fourth quarter and in the games, but let's treat every quarter as the fourth.
So 2020, Jake, has had two key comments by Russell Wilson. That one, and the one at the Pro Bowl saying that he wants the Seahawks to add stars. Did they add stars? Yes. Jamal Adams is about as big of a star as you could possibly add.
Yes, they did. And now you look at Russell Wilson, and you got to understand where this is coming from. In my mind, this is something different than anything we've heard from Russell Wilson. It's because he wants to win. He's the most competitive person on the planet. And he believes at this point in time that he gives them the best chance to win. That putting the allowing the ball to come through him gives them the best chance to win. And in 2019, at times, he definitely showed that. He showed that he's one of the best players in this league. And now you're heading into year three of this partnership between Brian Schottenheimer, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson. You need to start seeing the best version of this offense in order for the Seahawks to truly get to where they haven't been, Tom, since 2014. So anybody wants to tell me, oh, it's worked out pretty great. It's worked out pretty great for Russell and Pete and this guy. What's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to get back to the big show, the Super Bowl. And I think that you're seeing your quarterback push just for a little bit of a stretch on the philosophy to work together. And DJ, if you could find that cut for us, we played it at the 1 o'clock hour of Pete Carroll talking about and responding to Russell Wilson's comments. You have that for us? Let's roll that.
Yeah, well, I think, as we've been saying, that Russ is the best he's ever been, you know, and so we want Russ to be able to do as much as he can possibly do that fits within, you know, the framework. And so it's just a natural evolution. You know, for years, John, I feel like I've been saying to people as they ask, you know, how good is Russell? How does he compare? And I said, well, give him some time to get some years under his belt, you know, and this is an extraordinary position to play. And he really is in total command of it now. He's at the best that he's ever been, like, as I said. And so that just gives us more freedom to utilize his background and his wits and all of the great ingenuity that he can bring to the game. We'll just continue to expand the things that he does for us. And he's really excited about that, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, in year nine, it's time to use all that and turn up the dial to 100%. What do you think, Tom?
No, just stay where you are. It's fine.
I see the wheels turning, Tom. What's on your mind?
Well, I mean, I don't understand the like when people defend Pete Carroll, they always cite the winning records and the playoff appearances that they've had since 2014. Well, it's worked out pretty well. Okay, well, if that's the case, are you content to just, like, never get better? I mean, the reason why they haven't gotten any better than that is, A, they've had some trouble drafting, and, B, they haven't maximized Russell Wilson. Hopefully, this will be the year where both of those things, and we can see the fruits of their labor, both sides, Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. If you're content with 11-5, 10-6, and just being, you know, booted out in the second round, then fine. Run that same offense for the first three quarters of the game. See how far it gets you. See how the point differential turns out. I want to be better. I want to get to that NFC Championship, Super Bowl, whatever it is. They have to.
Get preach.
Next. Did we overlook something yesterday, Jake, when it came to that Kima Siverin incident? Kima Siverin was the guy, undrafted quarterback, cornerback, who tried to sneak that gal into his room, got caught, got kicked off the team. And if you think about it, I mean, the reason you're not supposed to be doing that anyway. But now that we have COVID protocols, you know, protocols that are supposed to protect the team, isolate them from contracting this virus. I mean, had given him this virus and then he spread it around, that could have been a catastrophe for this team.
Yes. I mean, was it a sign of selfishness? Was it a sign of just a rookie having no clue how to handle this process and blowing a huge opportunity away? Yes, all those things. But this is a stark reminder to the NFL. This is a stark reminder to the Seahawks organization that they have to do everything that they can and that the players themselves need to hold each other accountable in order for this thing to go off without a hitch, for this season to be a success. And for all the positives that we've talked about, the Seahawks organization surrounding this COVID scenario and, you know, not having many guys opt out, not many guys test positive, it's a constant battle that you cannot get complacent with.
I mean, this story made national news yesterday, A, because it was funny, and that's how we treated it on our show. But then I woke up this morning and I saw Stephen A. and Max Kellerman talking about it on First Take. And they had these looks on their faces. They were like, oh, my God, this is so serious. And you know what it is? It is serious because it could have been the ruination of training camp and perhaps beyond. Next. For anybody worried about the defense, and that really is the wild. I mean, the offensive line is a wild card, too. But the front four in particular, the pass rush, definitely a wild card on this team. But for anybody who's worried about that, and I'll count myself among them, the law of averages says that they have to get better. They have to get better, okay? You bring in Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayoa, LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, Jaron Reed. They're already here. Draft Alton Robinson. Taylor, we'll see what ends up happening with him. But those are six guys we just named there. Some of them, at least some of them, have to improve. I mean, the most surprising scenario, Jake, in there is that all of them are just terrible and they give you nothing.
It would be the surprising situation about that, and that would lead to a whole different type of discussion. Now, you're not going to want to hear this. Pro Football Focus, as we revealed a few weeks ago, they revealed their defensive line groups. They had the Seahawks ranked 32nd in the league at the defensive line position. Now, they don't know what's going to happen. They're not the, you know, be-all, end-all. But they are going to have to really show the league Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayoa, all those guys that you just mentioned, Rasheem Green, LJ Collier. They are going to have to step up in a big way and play roles that they haven't played. Bruce Irvin has not been a team's leading pass rusher heading into a season. Benson Mayoa has not been a guy that you are expecting to play heavy percentage of first, second down. So there are roles. LJ Collier, you're going to need a significant amount more production than what you got from them last year. So law of averages say yes, Tom. They got a lot of proving to do out there on the field.
Seahawks training camp is here. It's time for 2-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Starting Monday, join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon featuring John Clayton and our Seahawk experts. Then it's your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon on Instagram Live. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp with 2-a-days starting on Monday. All right, the timeline is coming up next. I saw this thing last night on Twitter. I couldn't believe, but I alerted the Mariners as soon as I saw it. It's a tradition. It's a game day promo that we have to bring back. And it's one of the most absurd things you've ever heard of. Timeline's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Okay, how does Stacy normally do this? She sings a little bit, and then she says, it's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. The segment where you can contribute stories by tweeting them to us, stories you see on your own timeline, at JT Heaps, at Tom Wassel, at Stacy Rost. By the way, I want to point out that Stacy kept her word, but even though it's her vacation day today, she did not contribute any stories or really anything to the show. We told her just to take a vacation day, take the day off. You don't have to do anything for the show. And to this point, she has done so, Jake.
She has. And she said she would be listening to the show, which I'm not sure why. Yeah. Enjoy your day off. and my favorite part about Stacey yesterday was she was saying sorry as she said she was going to take a day off. Like, you've been working your tail off and you haven't taken hardly any vacation days. Get out of here.
That's right. All right, our first story, this is the one I teased. This came across, I follow Baseball Reference. They're a good follow for really everything. On this day, in 1951, everyone who showed up with a musical instrument was admitted free to Ebbets Field. 2,426 fans took advantage of the offer, including one with a piano. Somebody brought a piano into a baseball stadium just to get free access. Now, 2,400 people with instruments, I'm not sure how that goes, and I'm not sure what it sounded like at Ebbets Field that night, but I tweeted Kevin Martinez, who's in charge of all the marketing over there and all the stadium promos, giveaways, stuff like that. I think we need to bring that to T-Mobile Park. What do you think, Jake? What instrument would you bring?
What instrument would I bring? Well, definitely not a piano. But what kind of piano are we talking about here? Are we talking about like one of the tiny toy pianos that you could play? Or are we talking about a full-fledged piano?
Like a grand piano?
Oh, my word. What kind of...
Well, they didn't have those little Casio keyboards back in 1951. So I'm thinking it was at least like an upright piano.
Yeah, it's got to be. Probably, you know, you bring it back to your... you know, your elementary school days, and you bring a recorder. I mean, that's pretty easy to carry. Play a little Hot Cross Buns. Play a little Mary Had a Little Lamb. I mean, let's bring it to old school. You know what I'm saying?
You could bring in your Glockenspiel, like from you can steal it from your school music class,
that.
Problem is, like, I've got all these guitars and basses over to my right here and amplifiers, but I would need a way to plug them in. Like, I can't sit at my seat. There's no outlets over there, so I don't know. Maybe I should go back to the days where I played saxophone, like in elementary, high school, something like that.
Yeah. Could you bring, like, I don't know if they have that for amps, but could you bring, like, an adapter of some kind, a way to be able play that without having to plug in?
Yeah, they do have those. They're like little battery-operated amps that you can actually kind of sling over your shoulder. They're very small. That's not a bad idea. Maybe I'll bring one of those. But yeah, I think we should do that. I don't know how many people would show up with instruments if they did that at T-Mobile, but it would be an interesting experiment.
The people need to hear your sweet music, Tom. And you know what the problem is I actually think a lot of people would bring instruments, and it would probably be the most annoying day of all days at the park. I can only imagine that the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line is blowing up with cowbells and kazoos. Yeah. I mean, could you imagine hearing that all throughout the 9 innings of baseball? No, thank you.
In music, that's what we call cacophony. All right.
You learn something new
Plesak,
every day.
Yeah, speaking of cacophony, Zach Plesak, who is a member of the Cleveland Indians, got in trouble the other day and actually got called out by his teammates because he left. He went out clubbing and he put everybody at risk for COVID, broke the COVID protocol. And he went on Instagram yesterday and defended himself. Cut 6.
I want to get on here and clear the air on some stuff. Kind of voice my opinion, voice some raw emotion to you guys and get out the truth so that you guys can kind of understand what's happening so we can all be on the same page, because the media really... is terrible, man. The media is terrible, and they do some evil things to create stories and to make things sound better, makes things sound worse. And truthfully, I'm disgusted the way the media has handled this whole situation surrounding our team.
You know what? I hear what he's saying, because no matter what he did, the media does make everything a heck of a lot worse. And I'm sure when he says media, he probably just means whatever he sees online, whether it's fans or whoever. You know, like the media, when people say the media, that means a lot of different things. It means, you know, some yokel in his basement who runs a blog online. It means CNN. It means us. It means ESPN. It means a lot of different things. So when you say the media, I mean, you need to kind of narrow that down. But you did what you did, partner. Even your own teammates called you out. Think about that. Like, for baseball players, to call out their teammates publicly. I mean, you must have really pissed or upset them for that to happen. So, I mean, if I were you, I would just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, don't give us the rightful indignation. The righteous indignation is what I meant to say. I mean, you messed up. Own it, move on, move forward. Don't be mad at everybody because they're calling you out, especially your own teammates, which, yes, is going to attract media attention and reaction. That part of it is on you. You made a selfish decision to put yourself above the team and put everybody at risk. So I don't really have any I'm not feeling for this guy at all. And it's a bold strategy for him to go on there and act like everybody else is in the wrong and not him.
You know, it's funny, too, because having social media, things like Twitter and Instagram available to athletes, it was supposed to be this, like, great victory for athletes. Like, oh, we don't need the media anymore. We can break the news ourselves. Well, you know what? On occasion, that does happen. But really, especially the younger athletes, they don't know what they're doing. They don't have enough life experience to know that going on Instagram after the fact and saying, I was crucified, is not a good idea. A lot of the time, they end up just doing themselves in because they have access to things like Twitter and Instagram or whatever else. I mean, hopefully he and his teammates or whoever else is watching learn that lesson. All right, our colleague, Dave Ross, who has maybe the best pipes in the business. Dave Ross hosts the morning news over on our sister station, Cairo 97.3 FM. He's a very, what's the word, stoic state. He's like a very credible newsman type guy. He's very stately, yes. I guess would be a word to say. He was talking about the Kima Severin story. Yeah, serious. Roll cut 7. Here's his comments about it.
I think TMZ put it well. No booty in the bubbles. Is that the way it goes?
Roll it again.
Oh my gosh.
I think TMZ put it well. No booty in the bubbles. Is that the way it goes?
Booty in the bubbles. Booty in the bubbles. Oh, I get it. The bubble. The COVID bubble.
Yeah,
it's supposed
COVID
to protect
bubble.
Us. And the booty right. is the woman, right?
Yes, yes. I believe this is a shocker that shocked our station, you know, coming from Dave Ross. If you know him and have been able to interact with him. Yes, that would be correct, Dave. No, none of that.
It's like Tom Brokaw saying... And tonight on NBC News, no booty in the bubble.
That's right.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Tom. Got to keep that booty out of there. All right, Bumpus is coming up at 2:10. We have a text question for you guys, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We're missing being out there at training camp for a number of reasons. So for any of you guys out there who have gone in the past, what are you missing about being out there? Text us, 710-710. We'll go through some of them next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
I think TMZ put it well. No booty in the bubbles. Is that the way it goes?